The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vohra. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vohra.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vohra. On this show, we feature libertarian candidates running for office who will explain how they'll downsize government to make your life better and to make America prosperous, safe, and at peace. You can learn more about the Libertarian Party at lp.org and facebook.com/libertarians. State-level elected officials can dramatically improve our lives by cutting state government. They can lower taxes, pardon nonviolent individuals, and eliminate counterproductive regulation. Unfortunately, most Democrat and Republican big government politicians refuse to cut government. Like hoarders, they refuse to get rid of a single law or agency, no matter how useless it is. The good news is that many libertarian state-level candidates are working to downsize state government to improve our lives. Later in the show, we'll talk to Chad Grimm, candidate for governor of Illinois. But first, we'll talk to Steven Nielsen, candidate for state legislature in Washington State, District 2. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that cutting state government will make all of our lives better. But Steven Nielsen happens to be one anyway. He holds a bachelor's degree in aeronautical and astronautical engineering from the University of Washington. He now serves as a quality engineer and quality manager in support of composites for aircraft manufacturing. He is running to downsize government and reduce government interference in business and personal lives. Stephen, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Now, one of the things that you've spoken about is the use of essentially just loosely, vaguely justified theft that states are using to fund their counterproductive regulation and their crony capitalism. And one that you've spoken on actually has been one of the parts of government that people hate the most, and that is speeding citations. Tell us about that.
Correct. So there's currently a revised code of Washington, 46.61.400, which says that you can't go at a speed that's greater than reasonable and prudent under conditions. Then they go further underneath that to say that this is what the government deems reasonable and prudent, 60 miles an hour on a highway or interstate unless otherwise posted. Under regular traffic conditions, the speed of flow may be 65, maybe 68, because, we deem that as safe for our families. Now, obviously, you've got the reckless driver that'll go through at, 70, 80, 90 miles an hour, and, but you can't establish laws based off of the extreme and then punish at, a large portion of individuals mm-hmm. based off of those extremes. So here we have a law that is so loosely written that just says reasonable and prudent under conditions, and then they determine what those conditions are, mm-hmm. but those conditions change based off of weather, based off of traffic, and they make the decision as opposed to the folks who are actually piloting their vehicles down the highway. And what they do is they pull in like $250 million every single year out of our pockets. So
wait, hold on one second. Let me just go back to that. Just to clarify, you said that that Washington State, that's just one state, is pulling in $250 million a year in traffic citations?
Correct. Yes. At least $250 million a year. And the issue that I have with it is that we do not fight it. by and large, most individuals will just pay the fine. It's easier to pay the $144 traffic fine for going 11 miles an hour over when you were keeping up with the flow of traffic than it is to take a day away from work, put your case together and go fight in front of a court because the judge is going to rule against you anyway because they need to get their paycheck, right? So the system is stacked entirely as a revenue source only, and they expect folks not to fight.
Now, I know in many states, they even have a sort of a quota system for police officers that say, you know, you need to sort of give this many traffic citations. Do you know if they have anything like that in Washington State?
They do. They do have that. Whether it's written a hard rule or a soft rule, there's a reason why at the end of the month you see flashing lights all over the road because they've got to make their numbers. Right. That's how they get their revenue. They've got to make their numbers. And actually, the city that I live in, Ording, Washington, which is down in the 2nd Legislative District in the South Puget Sound area, they're actually adding a motorcycle cop with the sole purpose of traffic stops because they need to get, and this was actually said in the city council meeting, they need to get the increased revenue because there's a revenue imbalance for between the city court and the cost of running that court and what they owe to the state. So they're using traffic citations specifically to increase their income to offset the cost of running their court.
So essentially what this has done at this point is you've basically turned people whose supposed job is to protect, to serve, to reduce violent crime, to make sure that we're safe, and we're taking people who, and we can assume that a lot of these officers, that's actually why they might have signed on to the job. They wanted to actually help people. And now what Washington State and what even cities within Washington State are doing is they're basically turning their police officers into thieves.
Yes, absolutely. The term highway robbery is used very purposefully here because that's exactly what it is, because they know they can take the money without any fight.
Wow. I mean, if they try to raise taxes, at least they'll get a fight. But in this case, you know, they're just arbitrarily taking as much as they want from anybody who they want to.
Exactly. And so, you know, one of the points that I like to point out is how free are we when we fear that moment where we even pass an officer? Did he clock me? Is he going to follow me? Are the lights going to come on? There is an actual fear of the authority of the government representative. How is that not tyranny? So
Absolutely.
Focusing specific on elimination of those traffic style laws and removing that entirely because it is so arbitrary and it's used only to make revenue. Maintain the certain aspects of the law that say reckless conditions, so on and so forth, but get rid of the law that serves no other purpose but to, you know, perform highway robbery.
Okay, let me ask you this. What legislation would you be able to sponsor to sort of correct that?
Oh, very simple. It would be a one-line bill that would modify RCW 46.61.400 section 1 that basically defines that no person shall exceed the speed limit. Just modify the wording of that and make it a recommended speed limit and add a statement on there that no citation shall be issued except in such cases of reckless endangerment that's already defined further on in the law. It would be a one or two line law, very simple legislation. And I absolutely will sponsor that legislation. I'll draft that legislation because I can write two sentences that make sense.
And I think that right there is the key, because you know what? Any Democrat or Republican politician can say, hey, I hate speeding tickets. And people will say, yeah, hey, I hate speeding tickets too. But you're not just saying you hate speeding tickets. You're saying that you're going to sponsor legislation to get rid of these unnecessary speeding tickets that aren't actually protecting anybody and are just being used as an excuse to take money away from peaceful citizens.
And this is exactly why the Republican and Democrat establishment despise libertarians, is because we want to come in and take away their source of power, which is arbitrary laws that just pump them money.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that right over there is exactly perfectly stated, that, you know, we take away what they want the most, and which is money, and then all of a sudden, you know, their whole, you know, cronyist establishment falls apart. You've actually spoken in other areas and written things in other areas about cronyism. You talked about how corporations in Washington State and other areas are actually using politics, using their political influence to buy themselves special favors. Can you speak to that for a bit?
Correct. So, look, my campaign is being run solely on private donations, and I've made a pledge to mini report and hold myself to run the entire campaign for less than $5,000, which means I do not accept any corporate sponsorship, any special mm-hmm. interest money. I'm only taking donations, small private donations. In contrast, my opponent banks in each one of his runs banks over $150,000 in corporate and special interest dollars. 90% of that comes from special interest. So he has a very small number. And actually, if he got rid of all of his special interest dollars, all of the corporate dollars and PAC money, very light union money, but there is some in there, he would actually be on par with where I'm at right now, $3,000 in the last 3 or 4 months. So if you're looking at that, but he uses the extra money from the corporations and the special interests as a source of power.
What are they buying with their money? I mean, these corporations and special interests, like, what are some of the special favors that they're buying that maybe we could talk about getting rid of?
They're buying votes. Let's just come down and say it. So they get special privilege. If you take a look at my opponent's funding from his donors, and you know, he puts out ads that says, as the leading Republican House minority floor leader, I am challenging the Democrats on a daily basis, and I am standing up for liberty. But then you look at the Democrat donors, and they're exactly the same. The corporations are paying equally to Republicans and Democrats just to maintain the status quo. So you ask what it is that they're getting for their money. They're getting power. They're pushing mm-hmm. through really bad legislation that doesn't serve the people. It's destructive governance. So, you know, I'm coming in specifically with a task to end that corporate cronyism, end that that corporate sponsorship, and I'm actually looking at the best way to draft a state legislation that would actually restrict corporate sponsorship and anything other than private donations during fundraising for campaigns. Now, I know there was a Supreme Court ruling that said corporations are a person and they have a right, so we would have to look at avenues around that. But let's base it on principle. Let's let the voters decide. What do they want? Do they want $150,000 for one candidate in a small state legislative position that's backed solely by corporate sponsors? Or do they want somebody who represents the people and what's going to be to the best interest of the people?
And the key thing over there is that once we have people like you in office, you can cut government down and make it so small that there will no longer even be the possibility of buying any special favors because the government will be too small to grant anybody any special favors.
Correct. My intent, you're spot on. My intent is to look at my term differently than what the Republicans and Democrats are doing. They're looking at laws to legislate the people. I'm looking at laws to restrict the government legislation. So I want to make laws that prohibit the government from doing certain things. I want to prohibit their ability to tax. I want to prohibit their ability to gather certain funds. I want to prohibit their ability to focus on special tax loopholes and so on and so forth. And I want to make it illegal for the legislation to pass such laws. I'm talking state laws. I'm also talking constitutional changes here in the state and really make it illegal for the government to do the things that they're doing. That's responsible government.
Absolutely. We're currently talking with Steven Nielsen, candidate for state legislature in Washington State, District 2. He's working to eliminate these special privileges in government as well as to end the loosely justified robbery that's taking place via traffic citations. You can connect with him at StephenNielsen.com. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Want to help make our world a better place, but not sure where to start? Tune into Better Worldians Radio with the creators of the social game on Facebook called A Better World. Join hosts Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel, who will inspire you to make a big difference in small ways. They'll speak to experts, authors, volunteers, and everyday people who are changing the world daily. Better Worldians Radio is heard live every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Variety.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one Internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. We're currently talking to Stephen Nielsen, candidate for state legislature in Washington State, District 2. You can connect with him at StephenNielsen.com. That's StevenNielson. Stephen, we talked a little bit in the last section about how the state government of Washington state government is basically using this just loosely justified robbery in the form of speeding tickets to generate revenue for their crony capitalism and their other counterproductive policies. In addition to speeding citations, there's other types of citations that we're looking at most importantly, or one particularly important way is through the carbon tax. What is your stand on the carbon tax?
Okay, so this is the issue with the carbon tax is they're looking at old world problems instead of new world solutions. So because global warming has become such a politicized issue, nobody wants to talk about solutions, because if the Democrats come up with a solution, well, then that's supporting the global warming philosophy. If the Republicans come up with a solution, then it's supporting big industry and big energy business. And so it ends up this back and forth, and we're not doing anything. So we've stagnated in general. So the discussion is really a moot point, and it's just further politicizing. Should we be taxing carbon? We should not be taxing carbon. The cap and tax is a ludicrous idea. What we need to do is we need to look at free market solutions such as an XPRIZE style a sponsored event from the government, where if we were to come in and say, I want to pick a city, and if that city, and it could be any city can wish to participate in any company with any sort of solution. If that community can become a net energy producer and truly become energy independent at a local level and at a home level, then you get some sort of a cash prize to that company, to that community. So if we look at that, then what that says is we want some sort of advancement of technology, which is a real solution. Arguing about carbon taxes and big authoritarian old world problems is really the wrong way to look at the government. We need to empower free association and free market solutions.
Absolutely. And the great thing about a program like that is wouldn't really need to have the government involved anyway. I mean, we could have something, you know, via an organization like Kickstarter or something like that, where we could really work together and say, listen, government, just get out of the way in this one area. Let's just get the government out of the way of this city. We're going to raise funds, you know, via whatever method, and let's see if we can actually create something great, you know, without all the regulation and roadblocks and other permits and nonsense that the government's going to try to throw in there. Let's see what kind of greatness we really can get. Washington is actually at the forefront of a very important libertarian battle, which is the struggle to end the war on drugs. Where does Washington stand right now, and where do you want to take it?
Look, what we've done is we've dipped our toenail in the very beginning of the ocean, and we haven't even set sail on what we should be doing. We love to boast about cannabis legalization, but what we've done is we've just made it legal to have a tiny pocket-sized amount of marijuana and not get thrown in prison for it. However, if you got anything over than 1 ounce, you're looking at felony crime. There's a lot of restrictions still on transportation. So if I go to one of these stores, these state-run stores, that's going to be selling. And if they give me 1.1 ounces by accident, well, suddenly I'm a felon. And all the repercussions that go with that. So you can set up some sort of a police trap afterwards, and they can start weighing out how much weed you happen to have on you. So what I'm talking about is a complete restructure of the cannabis law, not just dipping our toes in the very beginning of the ocean. I mean, Christopher Columbus would still be in Europe if that were the case. I'm saying let's set sail with some real changes. Let's challenge the federal government. Let's remove line item 69.50.204C30, which would take THC off of the Schedule I list entirely. If you want to decriminalize, if you want to make it legal, start there and tell the federal government to get out of Washington State.
And let me ask you this. Is that something that you would sponsor legislation to do?
Easy. It's a one-line bill that just will say, amend the Schedule I form and remove THC. I will absolutely do that. I will absolutely, on day one, propose that legislation.
Now let me ask you this. Now, you have someone like me. You know, I don't smoke marijuana. I don't even drink alcohol. So if I was living in Washington State, how would marijuana legalization, how would that benefit someone like me?
It wouldn't. There's no benefit to it, other than they're not going to search you for suspicion of it. What we've done is we've over-criminalized our population. So we need to look at the specific areas where we're gaining momentum and really get that pendulum swinging in our favor, in favor of liberty, and just start knocking through some of the walls that are holding us down. Are we free? Do we want to be free? Or do we want to say that we're free, but, dot, 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 and have an ellipsoid there? If we want to be free, and so that's how it's going to impact you, is you get the benefit of actually living in a free society without any fear of of social persecution based off of whether or not you have a beer that might happen to be higher than 4.2% alcohol, or in Colorado they call it 3.2 because it's very restricted on the alcohol content of your beer. In Washington State, if you've got more than 1 ounce of cannabis, you are a felon. Do we want to live in a free society?
Well, what about the cost? I mean, isn't there currently a cost to maintaining, this continuing war on marijuana? I can't imagine that's totally free. You got to pay the police. You got to pay the prisons. I mean, it's
correct. Yeah, if we truly decriminalize cannabis, it opens up a lot of opportunities for hemp farmers. It opens up a lot of opportunity for a business that a market that exists, and folks are trying to start up under heavy regulation. If you take that away, it removes the burden of the government from those regulations. Also, it reduces the ongoing heavy tax burden in the court and prison systems. So there is no more need to have this, like you said, the war on drugs. So let's start. Let's start just getting rid of that, and that's going to reduce huge tax burden and the over-criminalization of the American population.
So that's pretty substantial. We're talking about reducing taxes. I mean, that's something that I think anybody could get behind, you know, no matter whether they use marijuana or not. What about crime? I mean, do you think that true complete legalization or a true complete decriminalization of marijuana could lead to a reduction in some of the prohibition related crime that we've seen?
Look, if we reduce the line item laws that restrict our free association, then you reduce crime. So crime is just the term that we've created to justify destructive governance. You start taking away, now, are we talking about violent crime? Is marijuana going to make people more violent? No, it's actually quite the opposite. You're more likely to become violent under the use of alcohol than you are under the use of a cannabinoid. So a lot of the arguments are these red herring arguments. So when we start eliminating these unjust laws, there is no criminal element associated with it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's some really powerful stuff. All right, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a really eye-opening and exciting experience.
Thank you very much. And I just want to let everybody know that you can go to my website, www.stephennielsen.com. Help me take down one of the most well-funded and most powerful Republicans in the state of Washington. Big government.
Absolutely.
Republican, I might tell you.
We've been talking with Stephen Nielsen, candidate for state legislature in Washington State District 2. As he just mentioned, you can go to his website, stephennielsen.com. He is working to eliminate some of these ridiculously loosely justified theft that are politely referred to as traffic citations. And he says that the police should be there to defend our rights, not to basically just raise revenue or rob the populace. He's also argued in favor of completely legalizing marijuana in Washington State, or completely decriminalizing it, so that we're not wasting all this these resources and all this money on this failed war on marijuana. Stephen is one of hundreds of libertarian candidates on the ballot this year who are working to cut state government spending and meddling, to make you safer, to grow the economy, and to encourage real job growth. You can check out the Libertarian Party at lp.org, and you can get involved in campaigns like Stephen's by going to lp.org/states. Please join the Libertarian Party and help us eliminate harmful state-level programs and departments. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back.
Streaming live. The leader in internet talk radio. VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In today's society, there is just too much competition. Women are taking on the same roles as men. They're working side by side, competing for the same positions. What is happening? This is transferring to how men and women feel about each other and relationships. We're delaying marriages or not even getting married at all. It's time to go back to basics. Listen for this groundbreaking show with host Naftali Schwartz. But it's not really that groundbreaking. It's just a new way of looking at things. Tune in Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
Emotional intelligence has been documented to be the most important skill for a leader to move up in an organization. Leader's Playbook will unpack what emotional intelligence is, why it is important, and how you can raise your emotional intelligence for yourself, your direct reports, and your team. Join Dr. Relly Nadler every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, to the Leader's Playbook on the Voice America Business Channel. Your success could depend on it.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. For the second half of today's show, we have Chad Grimm, candidate for governor of Illinois. Chad Grimm is the Libertarian candidate for governor of Illinois. He has also run previously twice for office. He has pledged to use his gubernatorial powers to cut government and improve the lives of the citizens of Illinois. You can learn more about him at grimforliberty.com. Chad, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Arvin.
Chad, tell me what happens. You're elected governor. What happens on day one?
Well, there's a couple of things, and this we started talking about very early on in the campaign. One of the things that you can do is, you know, everybody needs to understand what they're running for and then what they can do with the powers that the office
hold.
One thing you can do on day one is you can pardon and you can veto. And that's a great start because we have people in prisons that are in there for victimless crimes, victimless gun-related crimes, marijuana possession, things that have done nothing to harm anybody, and especially when we're talking about gun crimes. I mean, we have the Second Amendment as a precedence that we're all supposed to be following in every state in the union. And
now, when you say victimless, let's just go back to that for a second. When you say victimless gun crimes, give me an example of what is a victimless gun crime?
Somebody being pulled over by a police officer and they have a gun in their possession. They haven't done anything.
So literally just having a gun. So it's not like, you know, you shot at somebody and missed. It's like you just have a gun and now you're in prison, basically.
And now you're a criminal because you don't jump through the hoops that the state has put in front of everybody in order to get a concealed carry license. So because you haven't done that, now all of a sudden you're a criminal. You know, the Second Amendment states the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, the hoops that you have to jump through in order to carry or possess a gun in the state of Illinois is an infringement. Therefore, the states have the right to nullify that.
And it is, I mean, just to clarify, we're talking about a pretty significant infringement. It's not like you just need to put your name on a form. It is an elaborate process, which half the time doesn't even go the way you want it to.
No, so, and it turns people off to gun ownership, where, you know, it should be, I mean, I don't know that it should be encouraged. It should just be an option, the way that it, you know, was meant to be, just an option. If you want the right to protect yourself and your family, you deserve that right. You can't deny people that right. The argument comes up a lot, well, what about the police officers? I'm sorry, but they're not always there, and call times are high, and sometimes when you need to protect your family at your house, especially people in rural parts of the state where, you know, they're in unincorporated areas, and the call times could be 20 minutes. That's not fair to tell them they can't protect themselves because they don't want to jump through the hoops that the Illinois legislators put in front of them.
I mean, that would be kind of like telling somebody that, listen, we have a fire department, so nobody is ever allowed to have a fire extinguisher ever again because we already have the government.
it's very similar, yeah.
And that really is just an inherent natural right, one that has been sort of codified in the Second Amendment, but really one that's just a basic, fundamental human right, which is the right to protect yourself from violence. I mean, the idea that just because, you know, you're not, you know, some big, giant, like huge, powerful martial artist that now you're not allowed to defend yourself, you're always going to be vulnerable, is ridiculous.
Correct.
I mean, we have that in D.C. We have that everywhere. Just basically saying that, you know, if you're small, if you're old, if you're a female, if you're anybody other than Bruce Lee, now you're at risk pretty much. And there's nothing you can do about it. And that's the lesson that we're getting. And the fact that you're going up there and you're basically saying, and you are actually, you're literally saying that all those people who are in jail for these victimless gun crimes, you're going to just pardon all of them.
Well, it's going to do two things. I do intend to pardon every one of them, and it's going to do two very important things. We have to remember that the city of Chicago resides in Illinois, which has some of the most restrictive gun laws in the nation, also one of the highest murder rates from gun crime in the nation. Well, what will happen is once you start pardoning people,
first off, the amount of money saved on housing the quote-unquote criminals that are in jail for these crimes, quote-unquote crimes again. So all that money will be saved, not to mention it'll just clear up the whole debate in the Chicagoland area about gun regulations and this and that, because what will happen is if every time a police officer arrests somebody, the governor simply pardons that individual, then they'll eventually realize it's a waste of their time. They'll stop prosecuting.
And in a real sense, I mean, there's also a good chance that now people in Chicago are going to be able to not just feel safer, but actually be safer. I mean, if you're less likely to want to mug somebody if that person might be armed.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, somebody that's elderly, you know, someone that's elderly, somebody that's, you know, a petite woman or any woman or a smaller guy or anything like that, you know, who once would be considered by some an easy target, now all of a sudden they're not easy targets anymore.
Exactly. And even if you're not carrying a weapon, I mean, even if, let's say you're not, you never carry a gun. I mean, for example, I myself don't carry a gun. Mm-hmm. But I do know that if I'm in an area where everybody else is carrying a gun, now I'm a lot safer, because it's not like 90% of people are trying to mug people. I mean, that's like a tiny fraction. If everybody else is there just waiting to, you know, defend all their fellow citizens from violence, then we all become safer. I mean, we're talking about a major increase in public safety.
Well, this actually, I don't know how this story really fits in, but that just happened at a restaurant that we use as our unofficial campaign headquarters. We have meetings there. I mean, it's not really our campaign headquarters. That would be a place in Morton, Illinois. But this is where we meet with people that work on the campaign, with media guys, with my campaign manager, once a week. And there was just an issue where last Saturday night, somebody opened fire on his ex-girlfriend and or ex-wife, I'm sorry, and her current boyfriend, and then attempted to shoot himself and missed. And somebody in the restaurant was carrying and took the guy out. And you know, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what his intent was. I'm assuming it was to shoot himself because he tried and missed, but you know, you never know. And that's you know, I would say that was a positive reinforcement of what would happen if more people were carrying.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when we think about some of these really just horrific tragedies that have happened, you know, in the last few years, the massacre at Newtown, I mean, that's something where if there'd been, you know, just one teacher carrying, or maybe a couple administrators, or for that matter, just a couple security guards carrying a weapon in the school, you know, that massacre could have either been cut short, or more likely, it would never have even been attempted. I mean, you don't attempt to massacre a group of people that might be armed. You attempt to massacre a group of people that you know for sure are definitely unarmed.
Well, you know, I guess my question, and, you know, how many times does this have to happen before we figure out we're handling the problem the wrong way? You know, every time you hear about these mass shootings, movie theaters, schools, these are generally, especially schools, almost always, actually always, are gun-free zones. You don't ever hear about someone walking into a police station and shooting up a police station, do you?
I mean, absolutely. And the few times where we've had shootings at military bases, where does it happen? In the gun-free zone part of the military base.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, just as our last guest would probably mention, this stuff's not rocket science. If everyone's guaranteed to be disarmed, then they are vulnerable to anybody who is armed. And I mean that. Now, the other half of the pardoning that you alluded to was the people who are in prison for victimless drug crimes.
Absolutely.
Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, we live in a society, we're supposed to be free, you know, and the first thing I'm going after is marijuana, because I'm aware that society is ready for that. But, well, I'll go, you know, in my opinion, and I think if you understand the definition of the word freedom, as long as somebody doesn't harm another person, I don't really care what they do when they go home after work. You know, if however they want to unwind, if it's with marijuana or whatever. And we're making people criminals by having a flower, essentially, be illegal. And we also have prohibition that we've learned from this. We have crime on the street because we've made it illegal. You know, we've made the purchase of it. We've made the possession of this product illegal. So we have, you know, we've created criminals, and we have prohibition to look at as to how to rectify this. When during prohibitions, there were people, and I have a lot of family from the Chicagoland area that used to tell me stories about, you know, they lived through it. They lived through bathtub gin, and you know, the people were shooting each other in the streets over territory. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? You know, and
I mean, because they didn't have, I mean, in a you know, for example, in my situation, you know, I'm just, you know, just normal small business owner, and let's say I order some brochures, and let's say they come here, you know, or they never get here, but the company still charges me. I'm not going to go shoot up the place because that would be ridiculous. There's an entire court system that allows me to settle that. Whereas you have all the people where the only recourse they have is violence because they're not allowed to use the court system.
Oh, right. They're not allowed to use the court system, not to mention they can't call the authorities.
If
they get shot during some type of, you know, whatever they're doing, transaction or whatever, then they're helpless.
Exactly. And so what we're talking about is a situation that could, in a very real sense, dramatically reduce some of the violence in Illinois that we were talking about. We could dramatically reduce a lot of this violence because so much of it is related to drugs, because drugs cannot use our normal court system to settle disputes.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And, you know, when we're dealing with a state that is, you know, completely in a financial disaster, we need to look toward every way to save money as we possibly can. And when proposing ideas, I always like to think of, can this problem be solved with more freedom and not less? And 10 times out of 10, you can always solve these types of problems with more freedom, not less.
Absolutely. We're talking with Chad Grimm, candidate for governor of Illinois. You can connect with him at grimforliberty.com. That's G-R-I-M-M. The word for liberty.com. Candidates like Chad Grimm are working hard to cut government and advance freedom, but they need your help. Go to lp.org/states to see how you can get involved in campaigns in your state. You're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
It's time to take a new look at some of life's changing moments. It's time to listen to an expert who has been there and can provide insight through experience, studies, and enlightening guests. Tune in to Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets. Host Lindsay Levinson takes a look at relationships, parenting, health and wellness, divorce, depression, sexuality, philanthropy, and mental health. You'll look at everything you know in a different way. Illuminating Now, Lindsay's Life Secrets, airs Wednesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We're talking with Chad Grimm, candidate for governor of Illinois. You can connect with him at grimforliberty.com. Chad, in the last section, we talked about ways in which we could really downsize government, have to spend less money on law enforcement, have to spend less money on prisons. Now, if we're able to cut back some of these areas, is there a chance that we could actually cut taxes in Illinois?
We absolutely could. And one of the taxes that I would like to take on initially is the state income tax.
And, okay.
And my reason for that is because in the in 2011, I believe it was, we were sold by, at the time, Governor Quinn, one of my current opponents, Democrat. We were going to go from a 3% tax to a 5% tax, income tax. And it was going to be sold, or it was sold to us, as it was going to be temporary. And then in July of this year, it was supposed to go back to 3%. Well, as government does, and as we've learned from history, once government takes, it very rarely gives back. So now there's legislation going around that they want to extend it a little bit more and or maybe just make it permanent. My other opponent, Republican Bruce Rauner, he's got this idea where it sounds great and we can actually get off of that 5%. We can go to 3.5%. So I'm going, well, so what you guys are saying is that you both want to raise taxes, at, you know, essentially. So that's what we're dealing with. And, you know, when you talk about the income tax, I don't know, I'm aware there's a federal income tax, but if your average citizen, you know, you have Democrats that talk about they're the party of the middle class. You also have Republicans that talk about sometimes they're the party of the middle class. They want to help out the middle class. Democrats, Republicans, they all want to help out the middle class. But all of their policies hurt the middle class, especially their tax policy. You know, the Democrats really are the party of entitlements, and the Republicans are really the party of big business corporations, etc. The party of the middle class, I believe, would be the Libertarian Party, our party, because, you know, we need to recognize that the middle class are the people that that's lives would be dramatically changed if they had to pay no income tax. When you're making when you're making anywhere from, you know, $25,000 to $75,000 a year, in that range, depending on how many people are in your family, etc. You know, you notice that huge. I mean, just 5% of that going to the government is huge. Your life would change, and then you would have more money to do with what you wanted. You would spend more money, put it back into the economy, or guess what? You can save it and plan for a future, plan for retirement. You can do whatever you would like with it, and people's lives would be extraordinarily different.
And especially families with kids, because I mean that's money that they could be using towards, you know, more effective types of education to actually not just to improve the day-to-day lives of their kids, but to really invest in the future of their kids, because now they have money to use on high quality education instead of not very effective government education.
Right. That's dead on. And that's why I would like to work, and I believe with just those few things we talked about in the previous segment, with those alone, I think we could get the income tax down to zero, and that would be a major goal of mine.
Now, tell me this. Let's say that you're elected, and somebody, you know, the legislature gets together, and they actually pass up, they get a proposal, it lands on your desk, and the proposal's real simple. You know, as of this date, there's no more income tax in Illinois. Will you sign that?
Absolutely, as long as there's no, you know, as long as there's no pork attached to it that says, okay, the income tax is zero, but we're going to arrest anybody for whatever we want. You know, we're going to put up checkpoints all over the state, but we're going to have zero income tax. As long as it's a clean-cut bill, of course, absolutely.
Absolutely, and I think that's really important to understand, because that is something that libertarians and Republicans and Democrats and independents and Green Party and everybody now knows for absolute certain that if we can get the ball to the governor's office, and if you're there, you're going to take it the rest of the way. And that's a powerful, powerful difference. We're talking about an actual guarantee that if it gets to here, you'll take it the rest of the way. And we know that the crony capitalists, Democratic and Republican candidates, they won't do that.
No, they won't. They would never do that.
All right. So that's an important distinction over there. One of the issues that so many states are facing right now, in addition to the income tax, is that they're actually facing issues with government pensions, which are being treated just giving these radically superior advantages to all private sector pensions. Is that something that's also happening in Illinois, and what would you do about it?
This is something I've been working on since you had mentioned in the opening that I had ran before, and yes, I have. And this is something that's been close to me since 2011. And Illinois is, again, in a physical disaster. We're in trouble. We're in big trouble. And our pensions are simply not affordable. We cannot afford them. You can't. It can't be done. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I did is kind of drafted up a phase-out system of government pensions.
Mm-hmm.
When basically what it does is, well, let me first explain for those of us that are listening that are not in Illinois, the problem with what's happening in Springfield right now is all the legislation being drafted up to fix the pension problem is they're little things like, okay, let's have you work to be 67, not 65. Let's have you work to be 70, not 67. So they're essentially kicking the can down the road to try to pay for these pensions for another couple of years, and then you're going to run into that same problem again. But it makes people happy and makes them feel good for the time being. There needs to be a clean-cut fix. And a fix would be a phase-out system that can actually put more money in the pocket of the state worker. And what happens is, and these numbers aren't hard, but basically from the time that you enter the workforce to, say, age, 27, you would get all the money that was put into, that you put into the pension back to you in a form of a tax credit. Now, that's where we get a little bit tricky. We may have to marry this part, the beginning part, with the next part due to Illinois' state constitution. But then you would say 27 to, say, 47, you would have an opt-out option, which means you could, in fact, keep your pension. Mm-hmm. You could keep your pension and retire as you wish with that pension, or you can opt out of it, thus getting all the money that's been put into it returned to you in the form of a tax credit. And then you have the people that are older that are coming toward retirement, say within a decade of retirement. Well, guess what? The contract's not great, but it is contract law, and contracts need to be respected. So those people continue to live out their life with the pensions that they've been contractually obligated to receive.
So we're basically talking about a responsible phase out of a hugely problematic program.
Mm-hmm. And there's no way to fix it overnight. But this, what will happen is, as more people opt out and we're not putting more money into these programs, then we'll actually be able to pay the state workers more. And it'll create, more money in their pockets, and then they can go invest it in the private sector in whatever way that they seem fit, just like everybody
exactly.
else. And they'll have more money to do that.
Yeah, and as we kind of scale back government more and more, many of those state workers will have more jobs available in the private sector, because if we don't have, government interfering with the private sector, there are more jobs to be had.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, we've been talking with Chad Grimm, candidate for governor of Illinois. You can connect with him at grimforliberty.com. The Libertarian Party and his candidates are working to cut government to improve safety, to cut government to improve education and health, to cut government and advance freedom. Chad, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Candidates like Chad need your help. Please visit lp.org/states to see ways in which you can get involved locally, or go to facebook.com/libertarians to see how you can help with social media outreach. With your help, we can eliminate harmful state-level programs and improve all of our lives. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.